हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 27. Love is the only inclination of the soul, only its name changes according to the variation of propensities. For example, attachment for wealth is called greed. Attachment to female beauty is called lust. When the same attachment is manifested to distressed people, it is called kindness. Attachment shown towards brothers or sisters is called affection. And when is it applied towards the benefactor, it's called gratitude. When the inclination is favorably manifested, it is called love, and when it is unfavorably manifested, it is called enmity. In this way, the same single inclination of the jiva is transformed into various forms. This inclination of the soul remains in its unalloyed nature only for the liberated souls, where it can reach infinite excellence. The activities of the divine love are to discard all material propensities and to surrender to the Supreme Lord. Although such love is not possible for the conditioned souls, they have to practice gradual renunciation of all propensities by purest reasoning. If while practicing such renunciation any sins occur, the Lord will graciously absolve the jivas from them. So even why we function in this world, it's still happening because of this inherent aspect of attachment, or this love, right? This perverted love. It's still the basic principle is the attachment, right? So for the other person, it takes on one, then spiritual. One is for oneself, and it takes on the material. And then within that, where you're applying it, then it takes on all these different flavors, right? So it's still functioning on the same thing. So sometimes when we say they're so impersonal. But the point is it's because they're a person and they're acting on their own particular attachments that the problem comes up. So it's still actually personal. There's no actual such thing as impersonal, because our idea of impersonal is no qualities, right? But the reality is even the impersonal has qualities. So there's no such thing that it's not personal. So even though all the different reasons that the jiva does what they do, it's still because of their attachment. So it's just where you apply it, then it has a name. You know, does that make sense? So all these things that we consider, so many aspects, it's still an attachment, because the reason we're trying to gain that quality is attachment to it. We're attached to something. You know, does that make sense? And so then it's given that name.
Basically, all the negative function of love, like hatred and the envy, is when we think a third object gets in the way of achieving our primary goal. You want to get something, and somebody's in the way.
Yeah, you could say.
But also, there is like the pure enmity.
Pure enmity.
Unalloyed.
Pure unalloyed enmity. Could you please describe this?
Somebody was attached to somebody in a positive way, like later he is attached in a negative way. So this is just not standing at some course of action as an obstacle, but this is...
No, a present course of action, but as being the source of their happiness and then that being removed, then now they were supposed to be the cause of it and now they're not the cause of it, therefore you don't like. Does that make sense? So sorry if your theory of pure, unalloyed enmity didn't pan out, at least so far. Go think about it. What do you call that? Yeah, what's the Sanskrit for? You have attachment and then repulsion.
Dvesha.
Huh?
Raga and dvesha.
Dvesha. So your dveshavad didn't work out. Shuddha dveshavad.
So this would mean that all that jiva does is out of aversion.
So no, he's functioning out of attachment. Things get in the way of that. But it's just said when it's unfavorably manifest, because he still is dependent upon and expecting that will be the cause of, but because it's not, it's unfavorable. So in his mind, so his response is unfavorable.
In Vaishavada, it will be out of aversion.
Out of?
Aversion.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying is, no need to follow that path, because the Acharya here has said it's based on this, on love. It's just as perverted, that's all. Okay. In other words, the point being made is the nature of the jiva is to be positively engaged in the Lord's service, but that's being misapplied here. We consider it something different, but it's still the same affection, just being wrongly applied. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's, because we'll tend to say material life is one thing, spiritual life is another. No, all it is that there's spiritual life and then misapplied spiritual life. You know? Does that make sense? So in ignorance we think that the soul is not spiritual like that.
This argument that, because also in our philosophy is that underlying principle of all actions of all jivas in the material world is enmity towards Krishna. This is misapplication, not actually.
Yeah, but that's what it says here. In this way, the same single. When this inclination is favorably manifested, it is called love, and when it's unfavorably manifested, it's called enmity. It's just unfavorably manifested, but it's still the same principle.
Because you would love yourself to be God, and Krishna gets in the way of that.
Yeah. But it's just the aspect is just a it's just not properly applied.
Wouldn't it be the same principle that ignorance in itself is not a substance, it's just a dim degree of knowledge? Like it's
just lack of knowledge. Yeah. Just like night is lack of day.
Yeah. It's not something in itself.
Yeah, darkness is lack of light. It's not that these things stand on their own. You know, there's always going to be the one, and then it's going to be the one that's dependent upon it. You know, you have a theist, and then you have the atheist. So the atheist, their only claim to fame is that they're not theistic. So if they weren't theists, how would they claim to be an atheist? They have nothing to talk about, right? You know, does that make sense? So the point is that it's just misapplied. You know, what's the natural element, right? So we discussed the knowledge before. So that means he's going to be active, and then he's going to, you know, have attachment, right? So his attachment then will be based on his identity, right? So when his attachment, his identity is wrong, his attachment's wrong. I'm the enjoyer, so therefore Krishna. It's not so inimical towards Krishna. But if we understand I'm servant, then we're not inimical to Krishna, and then it works very nicely.
Are the same principles as in nectar of devotion with bhava and chesta?
Yeah, you could say that, bhava and chesta. What's the mood? But there they're taking it, the mood within love. Right? So which particular aspect is functioning? But even there, even within the material world, you still have those aspects. Yeah, bhava and cheshta. Yeah. Sins of all types may be called misery. Misery is a result of material propensities. Hence the following sutra, Sutra 18. Upadi krita hi klesha. Afflictions of the jivas arise only due to their secondary affinity to the world, because it's not the primary affinity. In the purport to Mantra 13, it is stated, the living being is perpetually suffering in different types of bodies from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. The human form of life offers one a chance to get out of this entanglement simply by reestablishing the lost relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. In his unconditional state, the jiva has a transcendental blissful form and is engaged in unalloyed devotional service. As soon as the jiva turns away from the Lord, his original pure inclination degrades and becomes attachment to material objects. As a result of this conditioned state, the pure knowledge of the jiva is transformed into material mind. The material attachments of this mind results in the misery of repeated births and deaths due to the fruits of the material activities. Thus all sufferings are caused by the soul's misidentification with the material body. So when he turns away from the Lord, then his pure inclination, which means attachment to the Lord, degrades to attachment to material objects. Right? When one's attached to the material objects, so then as a result of this, then the pure knowledge of the soul, that he's servant of the Lord, then turns into the material mind where he identifies with other things and has other purposes. Right?
I just question identification.
Basically. Yeah, that's why if you, as a servant of the Lord, and you see yourself as the Lord's servant, then you don't get the material mind.
Yes.
Right? Because he says it's transformed into the material mind. Because then we're thinking, oh, it goes, so do we have another mind there? No, it's this one has transformed. Our intelligence is the pure knowledge, right, of the jiva has transformed the material mind. That's why the mind is the prominent in the material world rather than the intelligence. Right? Then the material attachments results in the misery of repeated birth and death because he's attached materially, so engaged in material activities. Whether the pious or impious, that will keep him in the material world. Right? So if we want to get rid of the material miseries, we have to get rid of the material mind. That means then the pure knowledge has to understand attachments to be to Krishna, not to the material energy. Right? Does that make sense? So it's something we've always heard, but we just haven't made this progression. Right? So when we say we're not this body, right? We are pure spirit soul, servant of Krishna. It accomplishes this. No, we'll say, okay, that's that, but now what about the real stuff? No, but that is the real stuff. Because if you get rid of the misidentification of the mind, right, you get rid of the material mind. Right? Like that. And when you turn it towards Krishna, I am servant of Krishna. Right? Then you get rid of this, the original problem. The original problem is thinking that I'm also enjoyer. I'm not servant of Krishna. So when you think I'm servant of Krishna, then that then connects it back. Right? So if we don't think we're servant, that's what starts the process going. Right? So if we don't identify as servant, then the intelligence becomes transformed into material attachments. Right? The mind just is material attachments. And then we get entangled. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, when we have a look at this process, many times we find in some areas some knowledge of time service is already being established. In other areas, so it's like framework.
Yeah, that's what we were saying before about in the Anartha Nivriti. Different stages will be at different points. That's why it's important to associate with devotees, because the idea is an area where you're not so strong that they've developed, so you can take advantage of theirs. So this idea, I have to find that one person where everything is perfect, that's not actually necessary. If it's there, great. But the point is that generally you can always find someone who's more advanced in some aspect than yourself. You know what I'm saying? Even though there may be another area that's not very strong at all. But the point is this, where it's good, take advantage there. Where it's not good, don't. Yes?
So an attenuating Maharaj would mean that in every situation that catches our attention or in all the things we value, we have to try to figure out what creates the forgetfulness?
No, it's not so much as what creates the forgetfulness as see it in connection with the Lord. If you can see that, then the forgetfulness becomes more obvious. Right? Because the point is what we're looking for, that is the Lord. Right? So what we're looking for is that application of actual love. Right? But because it's been misapplied, therefore it doesn't come out that way. But what the natural inclination is that love is directed towards God. But we're not directing it towards Him as a person, we're directing it towards Him as Paramatma or Brahman. Right? But we are not in that knowledge, so we don't understand that. So, therefore, the mind is attached to the dead matter. But the dead matter can't actually attract the mind. Right? Because the living entity is conscious, dead matter is not. Right? So therefore, there's a... You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You're talking to a friend, and you're going on, and you're really excited about something, and then you figure out that he's asleep. Right? Do you keep talking? No. Right? Because there's no interaction. So then you're just dealing with the dead matter, right? You know? So that's how you lose interest. Otherwise, you know, if it's just a matter of, it doesn't matter it's dead, you know, then it doesn't matter it's dead matter. But then you would just keep talking because at least you have the opportunity to talk. You know, it's better than the mirror reflection, you know, it's like that, you know. This is, at least looks different than what's in the mirror.
He seems to agree.
Yeah. Great listener. Right, you know.
So it's not really like we remove the anartha, it's like we transform the anartha into anartha, into something valuable, like connecting it to the...
Yeah, body. Basically. So you could say your removal is by looking at the positive side. Instead of being attached to that, then you're detached from it. Because then there's something higher. You want to please Krishna, so you don't want to be attached to the material. So it's always being, that's why he says it's replaced with a higher. But there may be the need to go through that mechanical detaching it so that you can attach it. But as long as you understand that the detachment is part of the process of attaching to Krishna, then it works. But when we forget, we run into problem there also, because detachment is another attachment. You know. Does that make sense? So, thus, all sufferings are caused by the soul's misidentification with the material body. Yeah, because it says, as soon as the jiva turns away from the Lord, his original pure inclination degrades and becomes attachment to material objects. So the objects you're attached to are considered, when we say the body, we mean the body and all its situations it's in. Because otherwise, what's the meaning of the body if it's not interacting? Does that make sense? You know, you can't say, I'm hot unless the environment around is hot. You know, or I'm cold unless the environment around is cold. Does that make sense? So, sometimes we say the body, we think it just means directly the body. It can mean that. But it also means the field that the body is in. Because that's where the senses interact with the material energy. Because otherwise, how do you identify? If it's just you floating in space and it's a nothingness, then, you know, even identifying with the body becomes difficult.
So that's why the tongue mantra is...
Yeah, like unless you see something, then how do you... I'm seeing and like that. So, in other words, you can't separate the body and the field. It means they're different, but they're the same. It's the same principle. Krishna and his creation are non-different. Right? So the body... and senses and the field that they perceive. Otherwise, what's the meaning? It's a sense. You have eyes, but there's no meaning if you can't see. Right? So you have eyes on, you know, an eye on a hook, right? It means like you have these screws that have a circle, right? That's called an eye,
okay.
You know, or eye on a peacock feather. There's places where we call it an eye, you know, but it's no meaning to it, right? It's only when it sees, then it actually is an eye. Does that make sense? In the Shruti Shastra, it is said, identifying with matter, the soul takes birth in a mother's womb. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.63, the Lord says, when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So this intelligence here, you see, comes from when the conditioned state, the pure knowledge of the jiva is transferred in the material mind. And the mind will engage the senses, so therefore one will just get involved. So when intelligence is lost, then it will end up as material identity. In the Ishapanishad Mantra 3, it is said, the killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the world of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Right, so then we'll say he enters, probably gets translates as enters into the darkness of ignorance. So here, then a little bit more has been added by the author here. Enter into the planets known as the world of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Right? So it's that, you know, where people are faithless, that's the darkness of ignorance. You know, we're thinking, oh, it's going to be dark and, you know, terrible and full of sharp, pointy objects and things that go bump in the night and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But here it just says where people are faithless, that's full of darkness and ignorance. Right? So the lowest place may not be so far away. It's closer than you think.
The other guy is also faithless and ignorant and full of darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just say it's like that. The word darkness means that the ignorant conditioned souls attain the non-sentient objects of their desire. This leads to misery, which is classified by Srila Rupa Goswami into three types. Now, here, the word darkness, the darkness of ignorance, means ignorant conditioned souls attain the non-sentient objects of their desire. Right? So this can mean that the guy is sitting, you know, in some fancy all-marble shop, just paid the money, and they just handed him the keys to his Rolls Royce. That's darkness. You know, but we're thinking darkness must be, you know, some, you know, really not so materially pleasant place.
Yeah, because as soon as he gets his world, it's where his forgetfulness of the world.
Yeah. Then it's hidden. It becomes part of his body. Before it wasn't. It was part of someone else's. It was part of the owner of the shop's body, right? And now it's part of his body. But the interesting thing is how they define these words. Because we'll define them according to our own. So therefore we say, the leads to the darkest of ignorance. Right? The faithless, the killer of the soul, he attains the darkest regions. So the killer of the soul attains that region where they're most absorbed. They're faithless, they don't have faith in God, and they're the most absorbed in the material identity and the material objects of that identity. So that can be a very, very in modern terms, very sophisticated social situation. But it's still, that's the darkness of ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So it's different than a sinful activity and you go to hell. But at least there you're a person, you understand everybody else around you and all this. So there's the chance of repentance and upliftment. Right? But in here, you're just thinking how this is so much you and you're so disconnected from the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right? So it's just a matter of time before you end up in that situation that we would identify as the darkest of ignorance. Right? Does that make sense?
How do you define non-sentient?
Non-sentient means not conscious. So that means because what do we desire? We desire something made of dead matter. Right? You know, so even if it's, we could say something personal, you know, we want to be with a good friend, but we're interacting actually just with the body, right? The body, the mind, the intelligence. Mind as a substance is not sentient. intelligence is not sentient. It's just dead matter. But when the soul is there, the soul being conscious, then it does. Just like you're conscious with your hand, you can touch, you can feel. But that's because the soul is there. You remove the soul, and then it doesn't mean anything. Does that make sense? So it's made out of earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. That's the non-sentient man. Does that make sense? You know, it also be the sense objects because they're made out of the same stuff. So those eight means those, the five will be all the things around us. Living entities will be made of the eight, right? Because there'll be those five plus the mind, the subtle body. And then you add in the senses, all that. There's still the senses are made of these things, or the sense objects are made of those things. What you're perceiving is made of those things, right? So that's why it's the Mahabhutas, because everything's made out of that. Right? Anything that the senses interact with are made of the Mahabhutas, because the senses come from the Mahabhutas. Right? When ether is transformed, you get hearing. And that creates the ear that will hear. So hearing and the ear to hear. Right? So you always, again, this thing is that the principle and then the form that makes that principle work. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So that the gesture will mean the forms that will be there. Right? Your endeavor is based on forms, but there's a mood. Right? Right? So seeing then has eyes. That's the form that sees. Right? Smelling then has nose. That's what smells. Does that make sense? So you still are back to these two things. So the independent object and the dependent. Right? And the independent, it's the mood, and the dependent, that's the form. Does that make sense? We're catching the connection, all these different things. So in other words, the Lord and His creation, how everything works in the creation, it still works on that same principle. Right? It's not that there's different principles at work. It's just, it's applied in this situation. It's just like love is one thing. Then it has its application into money. Then love for money is called greed. Right? You know, no one talks about, oh, he has so much love for his money. No, it's not a romantic thing. Love for money is greed. You understand? So that's the it just transforms. That's all. Yeah?
It would be nice.
Which?
To point out the love in greedness.
He's so cute.
Isn't he cute? Isn't he so cute when he's so greedy?
So caring.
Caring about his money. He likes to be so close with his money as he puts it on the ground and rolls around.
Put it on top of himself.
Yeah, I guess temporarily. When he puts it up and it falls down on his hand. Yeah, true. Yeah.
The story of the Bhagavad Gita, there was one verse where Prabhupada said that those who have karma kanda are doomed.
Those attached to karma kanda and jnana kanda are doomed.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Because they fall into the body conception of life. So that's the catch, right? Because to get out of that is.
You have to get. That's why we say the thing detachment. But because of our conditioning of karma and jnana. Detachment means not interacting with the non-sentient elements. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore we think to advance you have to give up. But it's not so much you have to give up, you have to give up the attachment to it. Because whether you work with something or not with something, that's not the point. The point is to be attached to Krishna and detached from Maya. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but because we do have that conditioning, it's easier to be detached from material energy by giving up the interaction with it. Right? So in other words, those things that you can give up the interaction with, that you do. Because then it's easy, it's done. But those things that you can't give up the attachment to interacting with, those are the things, then you work with it without desire for, without attachment to the result. Right? Does that make sense? Because, now, why would that work? We would think, well, it's the same thing. But technically, we think that the dead matter is giving us our happiness. Right? So therefore, that's why we want to interact with it. But it's not, it's Krishna. So we interact with the dead matter. Right? But interacting with the dead matter, then we're, and the result is for Krishna, we're willing to make that adjustment as long as we can work with the matter because we think that's what makes us happy. But actually, now the result's for Krishna, so because it's devotional service, we become purified. Does that make sense? Mahabhuta, Mahatattva, and Pradhan. What's the... Why those three? Why not Mahabhuta, Mahatattva, and...
tomato sauce.
Why those three? No, I understand what you're talking about, but why did you choose those three? Yeah. Pradhan is the material energy in its non-manifested state. So it's just homogeneous. There's no difference between one aspect and another aspect of it. Right? Mahatattva means the jiva's time and false ego have been injected into Pradhan. So Pradhan then separates into the 24 elements, right? But nothing is grossly manifest. Okay, so that's Mahat. Now within Mahat, then of the 24, there's five elements: earth, water, fire, and ether. Yes. Sin, the root of sin, and ignorance are the three causes of suffering. We classify by Srila Rupa Goswami into three types. Okay. So misery is classified by Srila Rupa Goswami into three types: sin, which is misery, the root of sin, and ignorance. So all three cause suffering.
The root of sin would be polluted consciousness?
Yeah. Desire for it. Ignorance is not knowing our relationship with the Lord. So we see that we understand I'm serving the Lord, you get rid of ignorance. Right? Then you want to, you know, serve Krishna. Right? Then you get rid of the root of sin. But if you get rid of the root of sin, sin goes away automatically. Some anarthas are maturing and some are in seed form. No, the seeds are just the desire to do what you've already done before again. Right? I do an activity. So by doing the activity, the desire to do it again is automatically created. So that's the seed. Right? When the situation is such that the desire you want to you know, it's just lying dormant. But when the situation comes up and then you think, hey, that's kutaj, where it sprouts. Right? Then you perform the activity, Right? So it, then it will give you the results. So first will come the tree that's ready with the, you know, with the fruits. You know, then you get the result. Then it's our, then it's, you know, then that's done. Yeah, so as you do anything you do, the seed for it comes up again. So therefore, if you do chant your japa, then the desire to do that again is automatically planted. But if you do something material, it's also automatically planted. So that's why if you always perform devotional, then there's no material seeds to sprout. That's one thing. And what's there, because we can't tell all the seeds, they're the ones there from so, you know, past lives and all that. But devotional service is such that it makes the seeds unable to sprout. Doesn't mean they go away. It just means they're unable to sprout. Right? The two examples, if you take the seeds and roast them in a pan, they won't sprout. Right? Like that. Or if you take them and soak them in water and leave them in water, then they can't sprout either. So these are the two examples given. So it's just, they become harmless.
So the root of sin would be like the sambandha sin, the avideya, ignorance, the prayojana, that ignorance comes back.
No, your ignorance would be your means.
Because sambandha would be root of sin, I'm the controller and the enjoyer.
Could be, but I would take it that the sin is as applied, ignorance is more generic. Because when you say, I am the controller and enjoyer, but controller of what, enjoyer of what? That's generic. You know what I'm saying? Because it's to be seen in light of this. When, as a result of this, the conditioned state of the pure knowledge of the jiva is transformed into the material mind.
Right?
Because what I was seeing, ignorance as the result, and then this ignorance comes.
No,
back.
But ignorance is why you do it in the first place. It may give more ignorance, but everything goes back to its place. Right? Aniruddha always goes back to Pajumna anyway. Because ignorance is your existence. Right? So then, from that being your ignorance, then you identify yourself, then there's the root of the sin, the desire for it, the need for it. Right? And then sin itself is the activity.
Why, and suffering would be your prayer.
Yeah, suffering would be your result. Right, so then you could take that, ignorance is Sankarshan, root of sin is Prajumna, sin is Vasudev, and suffering is Aniruddha.
Even though we perceive that as pleasure, right, because we're in ignorance.
Because we're in ignorance, because that's the thing, when you're covered, then you can't appreciate that. Because the throwing potency means now you're suffering, but because of the covering, you don't identify it as suffering.
Outside yourself, it's happening to disturb my
brain. Yeah, or even if you're miserable but you think you're doing great. You know what I'm saying?
You're almost there.
That, or even there is the element that you're suffering but you think it's great. The guy is out on, you know, the side of, you know, some freezing cold mountain cliff. There's, you know, it means if he doesn't go up, there's no way down, like that. It's freezing and this and that. His fingers are freezing. His nose is freezing. But he's sitting there and going, wow, this is great. This is exhilarating. This is, you know, where has this been my whole life? You know, like that. You know, but it's like, you know, then all you have to do is take him home and shove his head, you know, under the freezer and close the door and then, you know, come back after half an hour. And then when you open the door, he's supposed to go, wow, that was great. Where's that been? You know, but he'll get it and yelling and screaming. He'll say, hey, you go up on the mountain, do that, you know, on the weekend. So what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? So they're covered. They don't understand that what they call pleasure is pain. Right? You know? Is that, like, if you get up and suddenly, you know, ran from here to the temple, you know, as fast as you could, you know, there's every chance when you get there you might vomit and, you know, all your muscles hurt and everything like that. But people do that for pleasure. Right? You know, they jump off a building with a rubber band attached to them, and they call that happiness. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. It's just a very big rubber band. Yeah, yes. It's just like that. You know, you overeat. You know, you're suffering, but you say that's nice. Does that make sense? So it's that's the problem is that, and so that's the covering, so we don't notice. But how we identify happiness is removing the pain of not having it. So if we get what we want, we call that happiness. Whether what we want is actually pleasurable, that's another thing. You know, so that's the. In the purport to Mantra 1, it is stated, the root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature through disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord. Right? You're not following the laws of nature, right, which is the energy, by disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord, the energetic. Right? So here again, the masculine and feminine principle. Disobeying the laws of nature or the order of the Lord brings ruin to a human being. Conversely, one who is sober, who knows the laws of nature, and who is not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion, is sure to be recognized by the Lord and thus become eligible to go back to a Godhead, back to the eternal home. Right? Because you're recognizing the laws, and you're not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion. Right? You need to eat, you need to sleep, but you're not unnecessarily. It's not a prominent feature. You're not overly, you know what I'm saying? You know, somebody has a diet, unless it's going to kill them, then they're so attached to the diet or so attached to doing this at this time and all this. It disturbs others around. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Because it's unnecessary. It's just, this is the way it is. You eat this, you'll be healthy. You don't eat this, you get sick. Right? But because we're attached to not being sick, then we get upset when it doesn't work. Does that make sense?
How does it come translate to male-female principle?
The laws are the female, and the proprietorship of the Lord is the male.
And our position is also female.
Yes, but we're the servant. Disobedience of the laws. So if we're obedient to the laws, to you know, and understand the proprietorship of the Lord, then we, serving the internal potency, serve the Lord. Yeah?
I was trying to translate it to husband and women.
Husband and human.
As husband.
That used to be husband and human. I can understand wife and human. But husband and human.
That was in the old days.
Husband and human. So then what is that? Where does that put the husband? Is that above superhuman or subhuman? I guess it depends who you ask.
And wife.
Husband, human, and wife.
Human, husband.
Husband and human wife? Or husband, the human, and wife?
Until they... Oh, sure. By definition, they should be in common species.
That helps.
But in modern ways.
No, but what's the question?
The rules are set by male.
The rules are set by male.
Aren't they?
Yes, they're established by Krishna, but they become manifest to us as the laws of nature. So then?
Trying to... translate this statement into
how the husband can be the supreme absolute dictatorial controller and get away with it based on Shastra, and how the wife just has to submit because that's just the way it is. Basically, is that in a nutshell what your question is? Yes, okay.
I know that's not what he's thinking about.
No, but he has his friends, you know. But at least in this way, then there's that superior element, so therefore it's better to be a brahmachari, because this isn't it. Yeah. But then what's the alternative? You know, go out and drag or something? Or, you know?
Well, we can see that so the proprietorship will be the father, the law of nature will be the mother.
Yeah, that'll work.
The children who has to obey the mother.
See, the point is even it's made, but the point is it's still not manifest. Right? In other words, the man has a certain amount of money, so that's the field. But the, you know, rules on how it's going to be spent within the household, that the wife is going to establish. You know, so much on clothes, so much on food, so much on this, so much. Does that make sense? You know, so the manifestation of the thing is there. Does that make sense? So because if it doesn't adjust with the woman, it's not going to happen. Is that okay? Because now you're translating the masculine into you know, that he's establishing it all.
Establishing the field.
Yes, but the point is he establishes the field. That's Sankarshan. He establishes the field, but the interaction is not going on with Sankarshan. It's Prajumna Adiruddha and Vasudeva. So unless there's inspiration in that field where there's a connection to the Prayojana. So when the mood connects between the masculine and the feminine, then there's Abhideva, there's interaction. But if the man thinks it's Sankarshan, he just establishes the field and then now he's done his job as the husband, he has them. He can say he's done it as a man, but not as a husband. Husband means you have to make that emotional connection. And then there's rasa.
Does this obedience apply to any, to both parties? Because the
this disobedience applies to us, who is the servant of the servant. Right. So here, if you want to say, it's not... Here, the disobedience is not talking about between husband and wife. The disobedience here is being applied to the children. The mother says they're going to eat, they're going to finish their dinner before they go play. And they want to not do that. Yes. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, so now the Lord's going to, because the only way one will be balanced is if the senses are controlled, right? The senses are only going to be controlled if the intelligence is proper, right? Because that means the material mind is going to engage the senses materially. But if you're not engaged in materially, means you're not dealing with that material mind. Right? So that means then the intelligence hasn't been transformed into that. So that means then that doesn't transform because you see yourself as servant of the Lord. Right? So that will be recognized by the Lord, and so there you become eligible, because that's the mood in the spiritual world. So it's not so much what you're working with here, it's what the attitude is. But, of course, by the attitude, you can check it by what's going on here. Does that make sense? So they are connected, but at the same time, they're not. Right? There's two different things. The material propensities are the misery of the jiva. Destroying these propensities is known as cessation of misfortune. Because when these evil propensities are destroyed, the jiva attains this transcendental blissful state. Therefore, the next sutra states, right? Because we've established the nature of the jiva. Then what happens when he's conditioned? So now we have to deal with is if he's liberated. Right? Because we saw before, that's how the dasa mula is running. Sutra 19. Anartha nivrittir mukti svapada prapakatvat. Because it restores the soul to its original nature, renunciation of materialism brings liberation. Right? So this is the reason we consider renunciation higher than material. So jnana is higher than karma. Right? That's why then in the think the sannyasi is senior to the grihastha. Right? Or the Brahmin is senior to the, you know, the other members of the society because of the renunciation. Does that make sense? That's the general social element. So it's a higher, so that's its purpose, is to restore the soul to its original nature. That's what renunciation is for. It's not just because it's good or it stands on its own as something proper. No, it's only useful because if you give up materialism, then you can restore yourself to your natural position, which is liberation. You know, the liberated platform. Right? So through giving up, renouncing materialism, then one becomes liberated. That brings one to the natural position. Right? Yeah, so that's another thing. But at the same time, as if the person who's on platform Gyan connects that to the Lord, then he's also then farther than that. So just, you know, naturally. But it's you know what I'm saying? There's always the exception, because then you have to look at the consciousness. You know, Prahlad Maharaj is a prince in the dynasty of demons, but he's, you know, a Mahajan. So, you know, there's always the exception. But the point is that the consciousness is correct is the common ground. You know. Bali Maharaj also, he's grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, same family, you know, same taking over the universe. So. There are five types of mukti. The general sign of all types of conditioned mentality is the aversion to the Lord. Therefore, all types of mukti are endowed with proximity of the Lord. The essence-seeking disciples of Lord Chaitanya do not need to imagine independent meanings of the word mukti and bhakti. Right? It means for us it's the same thing. It means when we say liberation from material, means you've situated yourself in the spiritual world. But sometimes for discussing philosophy where there's a misunderstanding, then we will make a distinction. But Vaishnavas, in their general conversation, they can use these words, and it's not a problem. So we say the supreme reality, like that, we're not talking about something else. We're not talking about, you know, what do you call it? You know, some reality game on TV. It's the supreme reality, something like that. You know,
supreme reality show.
Huh? Yeah, like that. The essence-seeking disciples of Lord Chaitanya do not need to imagine independent meanings of the word mukti and bhakti. Those who unduly distinguish between them do not have realization of either of them. Because bhakti means you're liberated from the material existence, whether you're situated within the inferior nature or not. And mukti, the point is liberated, you're only actually liberated if you're in a relationship with the Lord. Because if you just get out of the material phenomena into Brahman, unless you do something, which is the nature of the soul, right? Knowledge and love. Because where is knowledge and love in the Brahman? It's all nothing. So therefore, one will come back here. So it's not actually liberation. So technically, when you say liberation, then it means devotional service. And devotional service means you're liberated. Since the state of liberation is not intelligible for the fallen souls, rationalism cannot produce any fruitful result by arguing about this inconceivable stage. Right? Because the stage of liberation, there's sat, but no chit and ananda. Right? But what distinguishes the soul is chit and ananda. You know, existence is not something that really needs to be discussed. I mean, some do. They sit around and, you know, try to figure out in their state of existence, they're trying to figure out if they exist. You know, do I exist or not? I think, therefore I am. You know, all this kind of thing. You know, to be or not to be. You know, all these things that seem to be great, great, important. But that's not actually a discussion. right? Because if you don't exist, you wouldn't be worrying about it, you know, like that. The brick is not worrying about its existence, right? If that makes sense. So that's the point. There's no use to discuss about that. So the point is chit and ananda, knowledge and affection. If the Supreme Lord is all-merciful, why the misfortune has befallen on the jivas? The following sutra answers this doubt. Right? So, means that will be the thing. Well, why is it we're here? You know, it's like, generally it's like once a year I'll hear somebody complain about, well, why, you know, if Krishna is, you know, why didn't he make us perfect so he wouldn't be here? It's just, no, it's just, it's your choice. It's your, you know, your problem. You know, but if he had made us so he wouldn't do this, we wouldn't be here in suffering. So the fault's got to be someone else's. It's still, no, it's just the way it is. The following sutra answers this doubt. Sutra 20. Jivanam itaranu rakti hetur ishvara karunyam tata eva tesham svatantriya siddhe. The material attachments of the jiva are a result from the exercise of their atomic free will, which has been graciously awarded to them by the Supreme Master. Summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. The conditioned souls suffer because of their material attachments. Why the all-merciful Lord allows these sufferings? The Supreme Lord has endowed the souls with a certain amount of free will for their benefit, and he cannot be blamed for the suffering. Quote, entering with the individual soul, I create the name and form. I will create the name and form. That means into the material world. In the Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.10, it is said, a person who is pure in heart attains whatever he desires. He enters whatever world he desires. A person who desires auspiciousness should worship such a self-realized soul. In the Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.2, it is also said, one who desires material things is born again to fulfill his desires. The person who attains the Supreme finds that all his desires are fulfilled. All his material desires disappear. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.16.34, the Nagapatnis say to Lord Krishna, what you have done here is actually merciful for us, since the punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all their contamination. Indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he has assumed the body of a serpent, your anger towards him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. So, we understand is that these situations that are there, the suffering is there, means that we've given this independence, that's the Lord's kindness, that's the nature. So then we can do things. Like, people aren't complaining about their independence. They're complaining that they've misused it, and why didn't God make us so we wouldn't misuse our independence? But then that wouldn't be the nature of the jiva. Yeah, so it's not like, it's just an emotional outbreak that things aren't going right, they can't find any solution, and so, you know, it's got to be God's fault. You know? Does that make sense? It's natural. But the point is that it's his mercy that he's arranged this place. It's his mercy that we're able to work within it and progress back to him, because it's not so nice here, and so we don't really get too... I mean, we definitely try to get very absorbed, but the thing is at some point it doesn't work out great for us. And then... and so that it will... And that will be inspired to take up the position of someone who's not attached. Right? Because that neutral platform is not something we should be attracted to. Right? Because that's what the mundane concept of liberation is neutrality. Not neutrality in rasa, just neutral meaning that there's nothing happening, there's no identity, but that won't work for the living entity. Right? Because they're active. Yes?
Why there is mentioned name and form?
Name and form, like, because that's what the world is, name and form. There's the name of something and then there's the form of it.
It would be pada and padartha.
Pada and padartha, yeah. This name and its form.
Yeah.
So that's what this world is made of. Yeah. But on the material side, it's what we're looking for, and then what manifests that.
Aniruddha and Pradyumna. Aniruddha and Pradyumna.
Yeah, you could say it like that. But Prajumna is what you're attracted to. And then those forms, then that will be there. But at the same time, the form is also Sankarshan, it's the field. Yeah, it means they're all connected there. See, the thing is those there, but when you're dealing with two, you don't use four. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is you have something, and it has a meaning in one place. Like before, it didn't make sense. He's trying to apply that there, but he only has three pieces, so he's trying to put it into there. So with three, then one of them becomes two. Then when he figures out there's a fourth one, then each one of them can be one. You know what I'm saying? You know, when you're talking masculine and feminine, then the interaction is inherent, but that's not the discussion. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you have to see what is, yeah. Okay? End of chapter 2 of Sri Tattva Sutra. Summary of chapter 2. The chapter 2 of Sri Tattva Sutra pertains to the second topic of the Upanishads, the nature of the soul and its relation to Brahman. The individual living entities are eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and are subject to his rules. Right? Because Lord Krishna and his rules. Right? That's what it is. So if he's subordinate, he's eternally subordinate. So when we're not subordinate to the Lord's rules, then we're going against the Lord. So then we'll be inimical towards the Lord, so we won't deal with his rules properly. So instead of having spiritual, we'll be dealing with the material. And then because of that, then we suffer. So when you accept that he's the boss, we're his servants, so you follow his rules, then the material identity becomes removed. So the real intelligence functions and we see ourselves as the Lord's servant. Right? So then all the problem goes away. Although constitutionally conscious and blissful, right, because these were the two elements, the living entities are certainly different from the supreme living entity, Sri Krishna, right, because of volume. Right? The living entity is minute, and the Lord is unlimited. Okay. The seers of the truth have established three views regarding the living entity and the Supreme Lord, namely A, oneness, B, difference, and C, simultaneous oneness and difference. There cannot be a mistake in the scientific evidence of transcendental revelation, so all these three views are in complete agreement. Because if there's simultaneous oneness and difference, that means oneness is there and difference is there. And, you know, and so that's why the third one, it includes the others. It's a problem if you only accept oneness or difference. But if you accept simultaneous oneness or difference, you've already accepted oneness and difference.
In one paragraph, he saw the Mayabadi, Brahman, Ujjaya.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. Yeah, that's why these are so nice. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and all these things are very, very good. The constitutional nature and character of the living entity is transcendental knowledge and love. Love of Godhead is the natural and auspicious function of the living entity. When that love is directed towards objects of material existence, it becomes the source of all miseries. Miseries arise from attachment to material existence. Right? If you're attached to material existence, it's miserable. You're attached to Krishna, it's not. As we mentioned before, this gold and iron, the activities may look similar, but the actual experience is different. Like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like Krishna has been to playful and is upset Radharani, so she's not talking to him. So therefore, he's feeling bad, right, and trying to work out some way she'll talk again. Right? But when we hear about these pastimes, do we at any point become disturbed or anything? Yes? No? No, it's nice because it's actually positive. It's real emotion, you know, based on affection. Right? You know what I'm saying? But if in the material world the husband is not acting properly and upsets the wife and now she won't talk to him, you know, it creates all kinds of these negative emotions, all kinds of things. No? Yes? That's because it's you're dealing the same principle, but this is iron. Well, that's gold. So they're different. There's a difference. That's why unless one can tell the difference, then the two close pastimes are not described too much. We may describe for, you know, something here and there, and so it works nicely, but then we won't connect them into our life. And if we try to connect them into our life, if there's not enough understanding, then we'll have doubts about the spiritual. That's why intimate pastimes are generally not what's discussed publicly. Does that make sense? One could say, no, no, but that will awaken. No, it won't. Only if it's a proper association, proper situation, then it will. Because think about it. It says, by hearing the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna in the rasa dance, right? In the Krishna book, it mentions that it will free run from all lust. Right? But what canto is Krishna book?
Tenth.
Okay. So, and what's the rule on studying Bhagavatam? Yes, so that means when you've assimilated the first nine cantos, then reading the tenth canto about the gopis, that will free one from lust.
And also it says that as long as you cannot follow the four regulative principles, you have to stick with the first two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good one. Good note.
By the time you're at the tenth, you should be
He was saying is that he's heard. It has been heard. But that's there. Or if you want to say, it is said.
Bhakta leader vacha.
Okay. That as long as one's not able to follow the four regulative principles, one should stick to the first two cantos of Bhagavatam. So, where were we? So that's why when Prabhupada is writing the 10th canto, I mean the Krishna book, he's written in the philosophical points you should be gaining from the other nine cantos already into it. So then it's safe to read these, because any point that you may make a mistake, you see he goes and explains, but he does it so nicely, you don't find that it's a break in the story. That is expert writing. Right? Or expert storytelling. Right? But if you just directly approach those intimate pastimes without that, if you haven't already assimilated that, then one might make a mistake. So one has to be careful about this. But the point is that what they're doing is living the points of, you know, they're giving up everything for Krishna. So are we giving up everything for Krishna? So what are we absorbed in? Oh, that we want to be a gopi. But why? What's the great thing about her being a gopi? Right? Get nice clothes. You know. You get to change. Otherwise, every day, saffron, you know, like that. Difference in quality. You know? You get to talk in a high, squeaky voice or something.
Prestige in Gaudiya Vaishnava society.
It's a prestige in Gaudiya Vaishnava society.
Like you're on top of the pile.
Yeah, it's true.
Huh?
It's true. Lord Chaitanya gave the highest, so you are not getting the highest.
Oh, okay, so you're being facetious here. I thought you were serious. No, so the one's missed the point of what's actually going on here is that they fully surrendered to Krishna. So if you read this, they fully surrender. How in my position do I fully surrender to Krishna? That's following in the footsteps of the gopis, not sitting there and talking about gopi bhava and stuff like that. That's not. Point is you read this and okay, great, but how to apply it in your life? If it's just stories, then nice, but then you're missing the point. Right? Because the pastimes are to attract to that interaction. Does that make sense? That we want to serve like that. That's Rag Anuga. They have Rag. They have a surrender to Krishna. I want to have that kind of surrender to Krishna. That is Rag Anuga. Understand?
So it's the quality of the love that's observed, not the
Yes,
detail.
That's when it says that, what was it? Oh, he's not. Oh, here you are. The other day is, what were we saying? Was it this one? No, it was the other one. No, it was in the other book. About the mood of the guru, right? You know? So the mood is that particular kind of surrender. That's the mood we're talking about. Does that make sense? When that love is directed towards objects of material existence, it becomes the source of all miseries. Miseries arise from attachments to material existence, right? Because just any attachment, it will do that. It's not a matter of it won't. It's just guaranteed. The dog will bark. You have a dog in your house, it will bark. It's not a matter that it won't. No, but on a good day, he doesn't bark and all that. Slobbers, but doesn't bark, right? But no, he will bark. So material existence will give you miseries. Even if you get what you want, but then having gotten what you want, now you want more. You know? And unless you work hard, you don't have the piety to pay for it. So it's still, it's going to be misery. So it's misery to get it, and it's misery when it runs out. And much of the time, what you call happiness is misery also. You know, quoting from one devotee friend's father, talking about in his days as a hippie, he said, "What makes you happy makes you crazy." Right.
Or the, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Yeah. Or if you want to quote another famous one, is you can't quit, you can't win, you can't quit, and you can't break even. Can't break even. So in other words, they were talking about material existence. You can't win, you can't quit, and you can't break even. Break even just means, okay, it's not win or lose. You know, it's just, it's designed that way. Prabhupada explained. Material world is designed to give you trouble. That's the way it's made. Right? You know, like you go into a horror house, it's designed to scare you. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the scary movie's meant to scare you. You know, unless it's called scary movie, right? But does that make sense? That's what it's for. So material nature is made so that we'll be miserable. Because the only happiness is in connection with the Lord. Yes.
I observed that it is like nature of jiva to get attached. So sometimes we might get attached, even like not being conscious that we are getting attached to something, and realize when the misery comes.
Yes, if the happiness is coming, no one's complaining. No one is doubting free will when they're happy. Right? When the misery comes up, then they're doubting, well, where's my free will? I didn't want this. That's the only time. You know? Or when you're in control and everything's going your way, then no one's talking about control. But as soon as it's not, then, you know, who's in control, you know, and being exploited. You can be exploiting all you want. As long as you're happy, it's great. But as soon as you're not, then it's like, you know, who's in control, who's being exploited, who's the victim, all these different. The material attachments of the living entities result from the minute independence awarded to them by the mercy of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Cessation of unwanted miseries brings one to the platform of liberation where the constitutional position as servant of Krishna is realized. So you get rid of unwanted miseries, that means you have to give up the endeavors for those miseries. But not like the Maya bodies means stop, you know, endeavor. It means stop material endeavor, which means stop endeavoring for your, a result for yourself. Endeavor where the result's for Krishna, that's stopping material activities. Right? Because material is defined as when the result is for yourself. Right? When the result's for God, it's not material anymore. So that means one can either give up that field because it's not useful for you to serve Krishna, or one can use that same field to serve Krishna. Does that make sense? But it's based on their minute independence. So the material world's made like this, so it's our independence that we decide to get attached to it. So we can't blame someone else. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's end of chapter 2. So now chapter 3 of Sri Tattva Sutra, Achit Padartha Prakarana, matter. Right? So in here we'll be discussed nature of the material world and the Achinta Veda Veda element of bringing it all together and connecting it to the Lord. Right? So then we'll start this on Thursday. Today's Tuesday, right? So then I got a doubt that it wasn't Monday.
Quite systematic.
It is. It's very systematic. No, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is right, especially here because it's Upanishadic, so it's done in that, how you say, your intellectual platform, the field of jnana, you know, of the Upanishads. So it's done that, so it's very, very systematic. It takes the 10, means you have 5 sections that are naturally chronological. And then within each one, it has 10 sections that are naturally, you know, proving each thing. So in this way, it's very, very... And if you memorize this and know this, it's very easy to preach from. As I mentioned, it says Adnatattva is using this to, in preaching with the Jaimini Sutra Pandit. It means he knew the Jaimini Sutras. So he was using those sutras to logically present. And Adnatattva could always answer his questions and all that. So at the end, he asked, what's your framework? Because... himself following sutras, following a framework, he knew that he couldn't just be saying this. He was following a framework. So he asked, what's your framework? So then he explained it was this. Like that. So we see the acharyas can write like this. So just as they can write all these nice rasa things, they can write like this. That's the difference. We can generally do one or the other. They can do both. And you'll see when we get to the sandarbhas that Jiva Goswami can in the same sentence do both. Establish a real technical philosophical point and some aspect of rasa in one sentence. It's exactly the same thing, just looking at it from tattva or rasa. Like that. Because it means the study of the sandarbhas is in the, you know, the from the 9th year, right? But it's included in the study of the Bhagavatam, I used to give reference. Does that make sense?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.